You'll take your Bible and open to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. We have, for the last few weeks, been using our time together to talk about serving God by being a servant of each other. And this is a very simple lesson. I want you to see how the Apostle Paul applied the concept of being a servant in a local congregation. He's going to start, and we're going to read chapter 5, but I wanted you to see chapter 1. When Paul started this letter, he said that he didn't need to talk about the Thessalonians to anybody, for they themselves report concerning us the kind of reception we had among you. And he's going to point out three things in the life of the Thessalonians. He said, number one, that they had turned to God from idols. And number two, when they had turned to God, they did so in order that they could serve the living and the true God. And while they were serving the living and the true God, they would wait for His Son from heaven, whom He raised from the dead, Jesus, who delivers us from the wrath to come. Now back over in chapter 5, if you go down through the first 10 verses, the Apostle Paul talks about the saints there, that they no longer live in darkness, but they live in light. They no longer live a life by sin, but they live a life of righteousness and holiness, in imitation of Jesus. For Jesus was the true light, that lighteth every man that cometh into the world. John said in 1 John that we ought to walk in the light as He is in the light. And if we will do that, we can have fellowship with one another and with God. We then as Christians have been translated out of the power of darkness. And we have been translated into the kingdom of God's dear Son. Colossians 1 verse 13. What that means is that now I live a life no longer for self, but I live in service to Jesus the King. It's a simple mindset that is very hard to do. Because when you get up tomorrow morning, I know what will happen. You will begin planning your day. And most of us end up planning the day around the things that pertain to me. And so, we plan breakfast, and we plan work, and we plan lunch, and we plan who we're going to call, and we plan this, and we plan that, and we plan... And oftentimes, in our lives, the thought of serving God and how we can do that while we're doing all of this other stuff somehow just gets lost in the daily shuffle. But we ought to recognize, just like the Thessalonians, that when we became Christians, we turned to God in order to serve the living and the true God. Paul talks there about the three concepts of faith and hope and love that we take upon ourselves in order that we can serve God. But what I'd like you to notice particularly is verse 10. What I put on the slide is the English Standard Version of that verse. And it is a common thing that Paul talks about. He talks about what Jesus did and how that affects me. He repeats this four or five times in the different letters that he wrote. And this is one of those occasions. Here's what Jesus did. He starts from that premise. Jesus died for us. I don't think of that enough. Because when Jesus asked me to do something, it's not that he hasn't done it first. We're going to sing number 340 as an invitation song. I didn't talk with Tom about this, but the words of that song, "I gave my life for you. What have you given for me?" And Paul deals with that in this verse. He gave his life for us, that whether we are awake or whether we are asleep, we would live with him and for him. That is being a Christian. No longer my will, but his. No longer my life, but his. And so Paul now is going to have the last part of this little book. Only five little short chapters, one of the first ones that was ever written. And he said, if we are now living with Christ, here's what you're going to do. First of all, in verse 11, you will encourage one another. We have some of our people that are discouraged. They're discouraged about life. They're discouraged about their job situation. Some are discouraged about their marriage. Some get discouraged because of our children. Sometimes we get discouraged because we don't act like we ought to act. And we know that. And some of us have made good efforts at this only to find out that we need to try a little harder. And what we need oftentimes is simply to be encouraged. To notice, to observe. I always struggle as a preacher at this point. Brethren, there are some of you out there that I admire greatly. And I'm not going to mention your name because I would embarrass the daylights out of you. And I wished everybody knew what I know about the struggle that they've had and where they are now. And watching that, as they have done this, they've simply struggled. And there's times when they wanted to just quit. Wanted to just walk away. I can't do this. And all you have to do is, you're doing fine. Let's do this together. And they can be encouraged. He said that we need to respect and esteem those that labor among us and are over us in the Lord. You talk about being discouraged. One of the jobs that oftentimes is discouraging is being an elder. Trying to... One elder told me, he says, you know, some days it seems like I'm trying to herd cats. And you're just trying to get people to do what they said they want to do. You're just trying to get people to be able to serve God in love and righteousness and holiness, which they say, I love God with all of my heart. Why is it so hard to get them to do this? And it just is, because that's the way we are. But the elder are working at this and striving at this and thinking about this and praying for us and sometimes coming and talking with us. And one of the things that Paul simply said that you need to do is you need to respect them and to esteem them. You may not always agree with what they've said. You may sometimes have a different idea of how they could be more effective. I've learned something in all the years of my preaching. Those that think they know more about the elders and what they ought to do are usually the least qualified to ever be an elder. But we need to encourage them and to esteem them and to hold them high. And when you disagree and when you question, when you have somebody that you esteem and respect, you may question them, but you do it with respect and with honor. It's not a diatribe and a renouncing of them, and we hold them with such respect. The third thing Paul said, and he mentioned this in almost every letter that he wrote, be at peace. In the last 3 weeks, I have had people call me from different places. And they're discouraged because where they're worshiping, it's not at peace. There's a battle. A battle of who's going to run the show, a battle of how it's going to work, a battle of who. And none of that needs to be done. And it's discouraging. One congregation, I found out, has gone from about 100 people to about 20. And it's just that they're not at peace. And what happens is people get up on Sunday morning and they go, I don't want to go. If all we're going to do is go down there and fuss, I don't want to go. And I'm just going to tell you, Paul said, as much as lies within you, be at peace. Romans chapter 12. And that simply means you try with every fiber of your being to work this out, to be at peace. Brethren, we're fortunate. We've had our problems over the years, but this is not one of them. We have been at peace. We need to continue with that. The next verse, Paul said, we need to admonish the idle. I-D-L-E. What he means by that is back in chapter 4, he said, let each one of you work and support himself, and mind your own business. Boy, that hard. What he wants us to do is to not be busybodies in everybody's life. But in particular, what he wants us to do, and it's a little hard sometimes in our job situation, but he wants us to make our own way in life. To be able to have that we can give to others, rather than receiving. There comes a time in almost everybody's life when they need help. But that is the exception for the Christian and not the rule. And so what he said was, we ought to be working for ourselves. And when you find somebody that's not doing that, the Apostle Paul said, we need to admonish them. In the last few years that I've worked here, we've had one or two. And again, I'm not going to mention names, but the problem is they need to work harder. He said the next thing in this list, that we are to encourage the faint-hearted. The Thessalonians, when they became Christians, they were persecuted. The Jewish people were kicked out of the synagogues. Those that were worshiping the idols were left out of the work guilds. Back in the first century, if you were going to be a silversmith, you were going to work in that. You belonged to the guild, the local, as we would call it, a union. And each guild had its particular god that it worshipped. And if you were part of that guild, you then would participate in the worship of the various idols. And when these people became Christians, they said, "We can't do that anymore." And many times they lost their job and their positions in the community. And the church needed to help one another, encourage one another, strengthen one another. And when people became faint-hearted at that, they needed to be encouraged. I'm going to tell you, brethren, we have it so soft. The little group that I met with in China about 3 years ago, the Chinese government stepped in and took each one of those members privately and interrogated them. Not the way we would interrogate, but the way the Chinese would interrogate. And basically, they told each one of them, "If you don't quit meeting together, we're going to send you to the labor camp." And many of them quit. They became discouraged. They were the faint-hearted. They weren't sure they could do what needed to be done. And I'm going to tell you what, brethren, I don't know if you could have done it either. I've wondered, what would we have done if we were in the same shoes? Would we have fainted? Would we have quit? Would we have stepped aside simply to save ourselves from? And when you find somebody that's doing that, Paul said, you need to encourage them. Many of the Christians in the first century were arrested and put in jail and martyred. What would you have done with those that were in prison? Now, what you needed to do is you would need to go visit them and say, "We're going to make it." They may kill the body, but they can't kill the soul. I know that doesn't sound like much. But you know, if you're facing death, you need to hear that. You need to be encouraged. You begin doubting, is this really worth that? And you need to be encouraged with that so that you do not deny the Lord. To encourage the faint-hearted. He said we need to help those that are weak. We have an obligation to those that are weak. I've noticed something about you all. Each one of you is unique and different. Some of you have the ability that things don't bother you very much. There's some, everything bothers. And what we need is for those that are strong in their faith. We need to bond with those that are not so strong, simply to help them that are weak. And sometimes the helping of those that are weak is to help them with the very burden that they have. Be patient. When you're strong in your faith and you're trying to help somebody that's not, sometimes it's just hard to be patient. They're slow. They don't catch on. But I always think back, what would it have been like to be Jesus and have to deal with Peter and James and John? And they didn't get it. He told them over and over and over again, the greatest among you is he that serves. And then they would turn right around and argue about which one of them was the greatest. They'd do it, and he'd reprove, and they'd do it, and he would reprove, and they did it. And they, right up to the very last night that he was with them. Be patient. It took me years to change from an unbeliever into a believer. I'm not dumb. I'm pig-headed. It's not that I didn't understand what was it. I didn't want to believe it. And I argued, and I fussed, and I denied. But here I am. And patience. I've often found just one more time. And oftentimes, one more time will do it. And you never know when that one more time is going to be. And rather than simply giving up and washing our hands, what we do is we do it one more time. We pick them up. We encourage them. We send one more note. We make one more phone call. We simply try and try and try. Because that is what patience with each other is. The Apostle Paul went on to say, we do not return evil for evil. That there will be no revenge from... This is the way of the world. You like all of those wayward cop shows? Somebody does. Because they keep making the stupid things. And here is somebody that something bad has happened, and so he takes the law in his own hands and gets revenge. But that is not the way of Christ. And particularly it's not the way of Christ when they have done this to us because we are Christians. When we are persecuted, when we are slandered because of our belief in Jesus Christ, even more importantly, we do not respond in kind. We respond with kindness. Jesus said, pray for those that evil treat you. And then when he was on the cross, he showed us how that works. Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. As Christians, even in the church, if we're going to serve God, we need to serve God, not self. And when you're seeking vengeance, you're not seeking God and serving God. You're seeking self. You have to make a choice. The Apostle Paul says, rejoice. In the book of Philippians, he added to this, rejoice in the Lord. Have you ever worshipped with a church that was grumpy? I'm going to tell you what. It's no fun. And there's no reason for it. We need to be serious about our worship, and we need to worship God in integrity and in truth. But at the same time, there's joy. I am God's son. We are God's family. God has saved us and given us the hope of heaven. Praise the Lord. C.W. and Sue are abandoning us. That's my term, not theirs. They had an opportunity to move to Prescott, and they are going to move. And I'm going to miss C.W. leading singing. And I'm going to tell you, one of the things I liked that C.W. was able to do, that I have tried for years and I can't do it. He could smile while he was singing. Y'all try that. Y'all get too serious when you're singing. It's with joy in the heart that we're singing and praising God. Paul said, in our serving the Lord, that we are to do so in prayer, praying always with thanksgiving in our hearts. This is part of serving God. The praying for one another, the giving of thanks for what God has done. And this ought to be a lifestyle with us as Christians. And one of the things that we can do is we can pray for one another. Sometimes I can't do anything else. I am not a doctor. I can't hardly get the bottle cap off of the bottle, let alone prescribe what needs to be. But I can pray. Sometimes the doctors can't do anything. But we can pray. And when we have prayed, we need to give thanks. The Apostle Paul said in our service here, not to quench the Spirit, not to despise prophesying. You need to remember something here. In the first century, before all of the New Testament was written, many of the people were in fact prophets. They had the gift of prophecy that it was given to them by the apostles that they could then teach when they didn't have the book. Until such time as we did have the book. And what he meant by that is that when one of these men spoke, or when the Apostle Paul wrote like this letter, that you then did not despise that teaching. And I'll tell you, sometimes it was hard. What do you do when the inspired man stands up and he points his finger at you and say, knock it off? You need to quit doing that. That's not right. And many people quench the Spirit. Tell the prophet to shut up. Refuse to do what the inspired man said. And at the same time, he didn't say that we follow blindly everybody that claimed to be inspired. He said, test everything and hold to that which is good. God's people will follow God's teaching. And when somebody stands up and says, this is what God said, we're skeptical. Until we realize that is what God said, and then we believe it with all of our heart. Is that really true of us? Ought to be. The Apostle Paul said that we are to abstain from every form of evil. The old King James said, abstain from every appearance of evil. And that's, he didn't mean just stay away from it if it looks bad. What he meant was, every manner of that which is evil is off limits to us. We don't do that. We cannot serve God unless we serve this way. Now, that's an absolutely interesting list to me. Pick up your Bible, and for the next week, until we have our Bible class and we're going to talk about this next Sunday, I want you to read that last chapter of 1 Thessalonians, particularly verse 10 down through this. Because here's what it looks like. If I'm going to be a servant of God, what does that look like? And this is what it looked like. And Paul said, this is what they did. They turned from idols to God. And they now served God, waiting for the Lord to come. Brethren, here's where we are. We're serving God by living a life of righteousness, godliness and holiness. For you that are Christians, go to work. For you that are visiting with us that are not Christian, you need to be. And it's not a life of ease, it's a life of service. It's turning to God not just for the blessings, but it's turning to God for the privilege of serving God with your life. And none of these things that I just read to you this morning and mentioned are difficult and they're not big. I always am reminded of that old story of Naaman in the Old Testament. And this man that was an army officer from Syria, he came down to wage war against the nation of Israel. And he got leprosy. And he didn't know what to do. You're ostracized. You are pathetic. You are miserable. And his servant girl said, "There's a prophet here in Israel. Why don't you go see him?" And so, having nothing else to do, he did. And the prophet said, "You need to go dip 3 times in the River Jordan." What a waste of time. That's what Naaman said. Why would I want to dip in the River Jordan when I had better rivers at home to dip in? And the servant girl was very astute. And she looked at her master and she said, "If he would have asked you to do something really great and big, would you not have done it?" "Well, yeah. Of course, if he would have asked me to conquer or to..." "Then why won't you do the little thing?" And most of us are waiting for God to ask us to do something great. And what God has asked us to do is to serve. And none of the serving part is ever great. It's doing the things that nobody else wants to do. It's doing the things that oftentimes are unthankful. It's doing the things that oftentimes you're just going to have to do it again tomorrow. My mother told me to go sweep the porch once and I told her why. "It's just going to get dirty again tomorrow." Can you imagine sitting down and finding a dirty plate? "It's just going to get dirty anyway. Why did I bother to wash it?" So you go sweep the porch, but you're going to have to do it tomorrow. And you wash the dish, but you're going to have to do it again and again. It's always. But that is life. That's your life. That's my life. That's the life of a servant. And what God has invited us to do is to turn to Him and live a life of service. And if you're willing to do that, Jesus said, "He that believes and is baptized can be saved." And then you begin a life of service. And if you're willing to serve God, we invite you to come as together we stand and sing.